What lurks in the frozen wastes of Antarctica, beyond the reach of civilization? H.P. Lovecraft's masterpiece, At the Mountains of Madness, takes us on a journey where scientific curiosity collides with cosmic terror. This tale isn't merely about monsters hiding in the ice, it's about the shattering of humanity's most cherished illusion, our significance in the universe. When geologist William Dyer leads the Miskatonic University expedition to Antarctica in 1930, he has no idea that his team will uncover evidence that will forever change our understanding of Earth's history. What begins as a routine scientific expedition transforms into a desperate flight from horrors that predate humanity by millions of years. The discoveries made in those ancient frozen ruins force us to confront a terrifying question. What if humans are neither the first nor the most significant inhabitants of our planet? And what if those ancient beings are not as dead as we might hope? The Antarctic expedition begins successfully with revolutionary drilling equipment yielding significant geological discoveries. The team splits. Lake leads a northwest detachment following fossil markings, while Dyer maintains the southern base camp. Lake's transmissions grow increasingly excited as his team discovers an enormous mountain range with 35,000-foot peaks, higher than the Himalayas, with strange cubic formations along their ridges. The expedition's turning point comes when Lake uncovers limestone caves containing extraordinary fossils spanning multiple geological eras. Most shocking are 14 barrel-shaped specimens unlike anything known to science, 8-foot entities with barrel-like torsos, folding wings, and tentacles with starfish-shaped heads. Lake names them the Elder Ones, noting their resemblance to mythological entities in forbidden texts. Dissection reveals bewildering complexity. Dark green fluid instead of blood, multiple respiratory systems, and a 5-lobed brain suggesting enhanced senses. Lake's final transmission mentions building snow walls against a rising gale before communication ceases. Dyer's rescue mission finds devastation, the entire party dead, with Gedney and one dog missing. The camp shows disorder with strange 5-pointed snow mounds. Human tragedy unfolds not through supernatural intervention, but through our relentless curiosity pushing beyond safe boundaries. Driven by scientific curiosity, despite their horror, Dyer and graduate student Danforth fly beyond the mountains, discovering a vast stone city built millions of years before humans existed. They explore cyclopean ruins, featuring star-shaped ramparts, symmetrical windows, labyrinthine layouts, and stone bridges. The architecture displays a consistent 5-pointedness matching the anatomy of Lake's discovered creatures. The city's most remarkable feature is its elaborate mural sculptures, continuous horizontal bands depicting both geometric patterns and pictorial scenes of extraordinary artistry. These carvings chronicle the civilization's history, revealing the undeniable truth. This city was built by great old ones who came from the stars when Earth was young. Through these murals, Dyer and Danforth reconstruct the entire history of the Old One civilization, how mountains once held great temples with fantastic towers, how caves became temple adjuncts, and how groundwater created networks of caverns. Imagine discovering Earth's history is fundamentally wrong, that an advanced civilization flourished during dinosaur times, created life forms through scientific means, and that some creations eventually rebelled. How would such knowledge transform our understanding of ourselves? The carvings chronicle the city through geological epochs, showing its architecture amid lush tertiary vegetation. Despite their advanced civilization, the Old Ones feared entities dwelling in underground rivers. As the Ice Age approached, vegetation declined along with country life. Sculptures reveal homes with heating devices and protective clothing for travelers. Eventually, most Old Ones migrated to a neighboring underwater abyss, building a new city using their preserved gill systems. For construction, they enhanced their Shoggoth servants, amorphous protoplasmic masses that could form temporary organs at will. These creatures grew increasingly intelligent, eventually mimicking their master's speech. The old ones initially shuttled between their land city in summer and sea cavern in winter before abandoning the surface entirely. Their environmental adaptation story parallels our own challenges with climate change, survival technologies, and migration. Their civilization endured millions of years. Will ours demonstrate similar resilience? Following clues from the sculptures, Dyer and Danforth venture into tunnels leading to the black inner world. As they navigate the corridors, they detect the same disturbing odor from lake specimens. Soon, they discover a makeshift camp with items from Lake's expedition, open tins, spent matches, and sketches of the city in the old one style. Rather than retreat, they follow the sketches toward a great circular tower where they make a horrifying discovery: three sledges containing equipment and the frozen bodies of young Gedney and the missing dog. Their silence is broken by penguin squawks. Following the sound, they encounter 6-foot-tall albino penguins, descendants of ancient species that retreated to warmer inner regions where darkness destroyed their pigmentation and atrophied their eyes. Descending further to the entrance of the Great Abyss, they notice rising temperatures and a radical degradation in the wall carvings, crude spirals and angles that seem like parodies of the old one's art. What caused this artistic decline in a civilization that had maintained excellence for millions of years? As they advance deeper with torches, they discover headless entities, like those from Lake's camp, surrounded by dark green pools. They identify the source of the second stench, iridescent black slime coating these bodies, and understand what happened. The sculptures had shown this same slime on old ones killed by Shoggoths in their ancient war. Fresh slime sparkles on the resculptured wall in group dots, a message in the language of these cosmic horrors. In that moment, they comprehend cosmic fear to its depths, yet feel pity for the old ones. They weren't evil, just men of another age and order of being. Nature had played a hellish jest on them. Their contemplation is interrupted by the sound Lake had attributed to the old ones. Tekalili! Tekalili! As they flee, they glimpse their pursuer, a shapeless congeries of protoplasmic bubbles, faintly self-luminous, with myriads of temporary eyes forming and unforming. The Shoggoth had learned to imitate its former master's speech. Dyer and Danforth escape the underground horror and fly back over the Nightmare City. As they approach the mountain pass, Danforth looks back and sees something that shatters his mind. He screams uncontrollably, nearly causing them to crash. Though they cross safely, Danforth is permanently broken. He refuses to reveal what final horror triggered his madness, only hinting at a mirage beyond the mountains the old ones feared. He occasionally whispers about the Black Pit, the Carven Rim, the Proto-Shoggoths, and windowless solids with 5 dimensions, repeatedly screaming, "Tekelili!" Dyer ends by pleading to halt Antarctic exploration. Some knowledge, he insists, is too terrible for humanity. Perhaps Lovecraft's true horror isn't the monsters themselves, but what they represent, the shattering of human narcissism. We comfort ourselves believing we're Earth's evolutionary pinnacle. But what if we're merely the latest in a succession of dominant species? In an age of climate change and ecological collapse, these aren't just philosophical questions. They're shadows looming over our future.